Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Ben Kroger from Put Your Lights On.
I'm Marian Nova.
And I'm Michael Rogg.
Yeah, and Oliver Stark from Fort Rabbit.
And that's where we are today. The folks at Fort Rabbit were kind enough to let us use their space in Berlin, Germany, after the .all conference.
The folks.
The folks. Well,
I should correct that. It's not clear, actually.
The folk.
It's not clear if anyone from Fort Rabbit actually knows that we're here and that we can do anything.
They know. Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to talk about today is just we're going to recap the .all conference for, you know, whether you attended, but mostly for people who didn't attend the conference in terms of what you might have missed, maybe give you some FOMO, make you wish that you were there. So, Ben, I mean, why don't we start with you? What are the standout things that you remember from .all?
Well, we had some fantastic talks. I couldn't attend them all. Well, obviously, we had two tracks,
right.
But I was also speaking, so I was in my room rehearsing, preparing. There was one thing that I was sitting on the edge of my seat for the entire time, and that was the keynote by Brandon Kelly, which we can go into the details of. But that was very exciting, I think, for everybody there. To have Brandon up on stage telling us about what's coming, but also what's been happening, and bringing us all up to speed on the state of craft in terms of not only the technology, but the business, the community. Yeah, so that was really exciting for me.
Well, let's talk about it. So 83% of the new craft installs are running craft 3, right? So that's pretty cool. That's a pretty good indication of where the community is at. And didn't he also said something about craft 3.1, right?
Craft 3.1, he said, he alluded to dropping this year.
This year, okay.
They're, quote, pretty sure.
Wait a minute. So that's not an announcement.
That's what he said. That was the announcement, is that they're pretty sure it's coming. And along with 3.1, which infamously includes the new project schemas.
Right.
Commerce 2.
Also Commerce 2 and Commerce Lite and the partner program. And editions of plugins in the plugin store, which I'm super excited for.
Well, let's go into detail on a couple of those, because some people listening may not know what we're talking about. So, first of all, the product, what did you call it? The project something? What is it?
Project config.
Yeah, all right. So what is the project config? Who wants to take that? Who knows what that is?
Ben, that's to you.
I'll pass that back to you.
All right. Okay. So, Craft is the project config is a way for Craft to sort of present the state of the schema of your CMS. So your sections and your fields and their configurations. And so as you are building out your CMS and making changes to it, the state of that configuration is being stored in a YAML file. And then from that YAML file, you can commit with the rest of your project files. And when you shuttle it back and forth to different environments, from dev to staging to production, you can ask Craft to read that configuration file and update itself with all of the changes that you've made. And so rather than having to log into your control panel and manually create a new field in several different environments.
Which is horrible.
Or like taking a database snapshot and pushing it to different environments every time you change a field.
Right.
Craft will record the new configuration for that field. And when you deploy to a new environment, you can ask Craft to update itself. It won't do it automatically because that could get confusing, and also you might not always want it to do it automatically, but you can ask Craft.
And they said they might have they might have a console command. So if you did want YOLO
command.
And every time you push it, it does it, it could do it for you.
Then YOLO.
But it's important to note, like it's just the schema, right? So it's just when I'm adding stuff to the schema, it doesn't take care of content.
Right. Content is still in the database, which is where it belongs. And now config is in code, which I believe is where it belongs.
Right.
And so...
So we're generally talking about elements and element types, but also sections, fields...
Right.
And that kind of thing.
Sections, fields, category groups.
And this will become available to plugins as well if they want to take part.
So pretty much if you go to the admin CP, anything that you access after you click on settings is in there.
That's the config.
Everything else is still going to be in the database and is still kind of going to be in there. So, all right. So that's pretty cool. So that's actually a really neat thing that a lot of people have... I mean, some people have adopted, like, there's the schematic plugin.
Right, or Architect.
Or Architect, which is, you know, does very much a similar thing. But I think that's going to be really nice, right? It's going to be really nice that you can define it. And I think a lot of people are going to use that for boilerplate, right?
Right.
Like, they can just easily whip up, like, their boilerplate stuff and then just every new project, just stuff it in there and away they go.
That'll be useful, but absolutely having it be that the best and proper way to add new fields is not to do it first in production.
Right.
It's going to be a wonderful advantage.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes the workflow a lot nicer in terms of defining stuff.
Way less scary, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're getting soft deletes.
So what is it? What is a soft delete?
Soft delete is, well, what we have now is, I guess, hard deletes by contrast.
Right.
Where when you delete something, it is gone from the database. And if you want it back, you have to hope you have a database backup.
Yeah. And every now and again, we have this poor person that comes into Slack or on Stack Exchange or whatever. And they're like, yeah, so my client deleted this user and they must not have seen it. And they deleted everything that that person owned.
It's,
so you're saying there's now a rescue net or a safety net for that?
There is a safety net, okay. Yes. It goes into the, I don't know, the trash can or whatever state, and you've got 30 days to get it back.
Hmm.
Or you can go and purge it before that time.
So it's kind of like the Mac trash can. Like you throw it in there, and then you get buyer's remorse or regret or whatever. You can go fish it back out. Right?
Yeah.
And what it means from a technical standpoint is that rather than actually deleting a database record when something gets deleted in the control panel, you're setting an extra bit on that record that says, this is deleted, and all of the queries now are scoped to a context where they're only interested in pulling records that don't have that deleted bit.
Makes sense.
Is it another status, like live and disabled? And
I think the way it's implemented is as a separate column. It's not a status of its own.
I think they had to do it that way because otherwise it would mess up like existing queries that are based on status, right?
Right.
So it had to be something new that defaulted to not getting that.
That is the way that soft deletes are typically implemented, is with their own bit, because then you can apply a query scope, which just sort of adds an extra default parameter to everything that goes back and forth through the database, unless you specifically say no.
Right.
For this query, something like garbage collection or restoring something that got deleted, for this query, go find me the things in the proverbial trash can.
And so you also mentioned additions, and this is something that Ben, you and I talked about on the last podcast. You were very skeptical of me. I said, they're going to call it additions, and I told you I had evidence that Brandon Kelly said that it was going to be in 3.1, and you said, oh, well, we'll just see what happens.
Right, well, I did say that, and what I was referring to was how they implement it.
Oh, okay.
So we only have screenshots to go by for now, but it looks like you can have a standard edition, a pro edition. I'm not sure if that means that you can have a free edition as well.
Right.
We haven't really got the full details of that. But yeah, additions are coming along with a new version of the plugin store. Mm. So in terms of the front end, at least.
Shout out to Benjamin. He's doing it in my favorite stack. He's using Tailwind CSS, Vue.js, and Nuxt, which is... I'm really looking forward to that. So what is this new plugin store? What does it give us?
It's going to be inside the control panel.
Oh, okay.
But it will also be mirrored on, I believe it's, yeah, the current plugins.craftcms.com. It's going to be the exact
Look at that now, because it is so unscaled for how many plugins we have.
Right.
It kind of broke when there were more than 40.
Well, I think, aren't they also then going to allow you to, and this is a, not a complaint, but something that I brought up is that as a plugin developer, like I want a buy button that if someone is on my site, they can click it and they can go buy this thing.
Yes.
Now they actually will be a canonical link that they can actually click it to go buy this thing.
Yep.
Because it exists outside of the plugin store, right?
You don't have to go through the plugin. You don't have to go through the plugin store. It's like the plugin store exists inside the graph control panel and also outside.
Right.
It's kind of what it looks like.
But that's the big deal to me, though, is that we can have that link to refer people to. And you can just paste it in, but then also you get the SEO benefits, you get everything else.
Well, you have paid plugins, so.
Wow. Yes. But you might want to, your free plugin, you might want to link it to people to tell them where to get it.
That's true. That's true.
Whereas right now, you have to be like, okay, go to the plugin store in your admin CP and search on perversion.
That's
and
true.
Hope that nothing horrible comes up.
That's
you know?
True. That's true.
Yeah, so there's a small redesign there as well. They've made it much more usable. You can find out more details about the plugins, easier to get an idea of the features, of the additions, and it includes a change log as well. So that's something that you can link to directly, which is a nice feature.
Absolutely. We're getting...
Sorry to cut you off there, Marion, but they also have a kind of a cart feature, so you can buy multiple plugins in one go.
Gee, I wonder if they're using an e-commerce system that has a cart built into it.
Possibly. I predict for 3.2 you'll be able to have bulk discounts, but
right.
That's just my guess.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. We're getting for a disable admin functions config setting, which will let people who want to use the solo site with more than one person. It's kind of like the old... Was it client?
Mm-hmm. Client edition.
Yeah, so you can disable the admin functions in some environments, but not others. And we're going to get, we'll be able to turn off the site propagation for structure entries. So right now,
what does that mean?
Right now, if you have a multi-site craft and you have a structure, you have the same structure of the structure.
I see.
In every site, which is not always what you want.
Right.
It creates some superfluous records for entries that exist in one locale and don't necessarily exist in another locale, but Craft creates them anyway. So to keep those structures in parallel, and now we can ask Craft to not do that.
And then we've got commerce.
Got commerce. They're fixing live preview cross domain. So for people who use different domains instead of subdirectories,
which is a real pain. Like I know the core's pain that they probably had to go through to make that work.
Yeah, I've been struggling with it and flailing and failing to get that to work, and now I can just say, what you need to do is wait for 3.1.
So yeah, there you go.
I'm delighted that has solved that problem for me.
Yeah.
But so Craft Commerce 2 is in theory coming out the same time as 3.1, is that right?
That was my impression.
That's what they said?
Well, I know that, so for Commerce Lite to ship, it's an addition of Commerce, right? So they need that support in 3.1 to be able to ship that, right? So it makes sense that they're probably going to try to do them both at the same time, which is amazing to me that Brandon still has any hair on his head, man, with all these simultaneous shipping things, but, you know, whatever. But so does anyone know what Commerce 2 is going to bring to us? Just like a short rundown of the new stuff that's in there?
Shinier.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that it's built on Yi 2,
right?
Built on Craft 3, so the API is vastly improved. The documentation
important.
And the class reference are subsequently vastly improved. Which,
yeah, I think that was a real weak point, honestly,
which I'm excited for.
Yeah.
Right, and the implications of that are better performance,
right,
and extensibility.
Sure, there's a the subscription API now, so commerce
subscriptions are huge.
Can manage subscriptions across several different gateways, which is going to be very useful.
Partial refunds.
And partial refunds for gateways that support partial refunds. The whole sort of interface for creating a payment gateway is so much nicer now. I've been working on one.
And if you've never implemented a payment gateway for Commerce One, just trust me.
Like, it's not awful.
It's not fun.
It's not awful. I mean, look, do you remember before OmniPay? Like, life before OmniPay, and then OmniPay came along. Like, it was a vast improvement. This, I feel, is another vast improvement.
Right.
It's, a lot of just really good, modern best practices, and a lot less cruft.
I did one payment gateway, and then I had several clients contact me about doing another one, and I'm like, nah. No thank you.
Yeah.
So your advice for people who want to implement a payment gateway is to do it in Commerce too.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, I've been working on one and for the last couple of weeks, and I have found it very enjoyable.
Well, okay, so in fairness to Commerce, honestly, the real pain from doing that was the testing with the, you know, boutique gateway in question.
Right.
That was honestly like what the real annoying part was. And there's nothing they can do about that. You know, I mean, that's just...
Yeah. And whatever esoteric gateway, you know, your client wants because it is the payment gateway that exists only in their neighborhood.
Right.
Right? Like, it definitely does not have good documentation and, you know, you definitely cannot get answers to your questions from anyone who develops this gateway. So there's still pain there. You know, if you're building a payment gateway for some esoteric service, it will probably still suck, but it won't be Commerce's fault.
And Oliver, I want to get you in here. Why don't you tell us, so they came out with Commerce Lite,
yeah,
right? So what's the difference between Commerce and Commerce Lite? Like, what do we get in Commerce Lite? What does it cost? And what do we not get? Like, what's in the full version?
Yeah, a lot of people ask it because on this, in this comparison table, there's Lite with some missing features. No shopping cart, no tax and shipping.
Mm-hmm.
But people ask, hey, can this be Commerce without shipping cart, without taxes? And well, yeah, but the edition, the price for the edition says $199 and $999. Yeah.
Yeah. For the standard one. So I can tell you, like, for my use case, I've got a business that I work with that has been waiting for Commerce to handle subscriptions,
mm-hmm,
before we even consider migrating it. They don't do tax. They don't do shipping. It's just a purely subscription-based service. Commerce Lite is perfect for them, right? That's all they need. And it'd be a bonus that they can have products like t-shirts and stuff like that. But really all he needs is a nice subscription layer on top there. Yeah.
So just one clarification.
Because, yeah.
I know we have European listeners, me included, and VAT is a big thing in the EU.
Mm.
So my understanding is that a standard tax rate will be included in,
okay,
that. It's just multiple tax rates and complex rates and calculations.
Yeah,
those will be part of
this. Okay, there's a simplification, so.
Yeah, well, they did also announce that they are building a first-party integration with TaxJar, which, right, is an API for kind of automatically calculating,
yeah,
the correct tax rate based on the billing or shipping address,
right,
using whatever the laws of the land happen to be for
because
your customer.
Lest you think that, you know, things are crazy in Europe, in the U.S., you pay taxes by state, right? Like a sales tax by state?
No. County.
I was getting there. I was getting there. It's different in every state, and you have to actually file those taxes in the state that you do the transaction, right?
Also,
so where your business is.
Products as well.
Yeah. So where your business is where the... And in that state is where it's taxed. But the rate that you get taxed at is by county. right? And the counties are like all over the place. And it is such a pain to try and figure that out. You know what I mean?
I'm sure VAT, I mean, VAT is not much less complex. I mean, you, depending on how you're registered, either you're registered with each country where you're doing business above the threshold,
right,
or
right.
like you can sometimes register with like a gateway country and they'll do the math of splitting it up. But it's still like every country has their own rate and their own rules. And it's nice to be able to hand that off to a service like TaxJar that just does it. And I don't have to set 100 different tax rates in my
right.
commerce installation.
So that's going to be cool that we got commerce coming. But I'm also interested in, he was talking about, or Brandon, I should say, was talking about the plugin store. And I'm, yeah, he gave like a little chart of the revenue that's coming through and said that $135,000 had been paid out to plugin developers so far.
I'm assuming at least 90% of that has gone to SEOmatic.
I was about to ask.
Not counting commerce, by the way.
Not counting commerce, right? I was about to ask Ben, like, did you buy your new sports car? Is that where the is that where the 130k for 35k went? You know.
Well, this is huge news for me because this means that the community is, well, it's a healthy community,
right?
As far as I see it, and I think you can measure the health of software based on the health of the community around it.
Right.
And the fact that this much is being paid out to plugin developers means that there are people in the community, myself included, who are making a living from this.
Right.
So we are not only depending on it, but we're also contributing to it and helping each other.
And I don't just see that as revenue that plugin developers have made. I also see that as if these agencies and freelancers have gone out to buy these things, we probably have saved agencies and freelancers like tons of time because they're able to just purchase a prefab thing that they needed and get what the project they're working on for their clients up and running quicker. So, I mean, yeah.
Right. I mean, building a plugin is a big investment, right?
Yeah.
A big investment of time.
Someone should give a talk on that. Someone should give a talk at .all about
the art of plugin development.
That's it. The art of plugin development. That's totally what should happen.
I'll propose a talk.
All right, good.
No, but this is huge. And this also, if we keep in mind, 20% of this goes towards Pixel and Tonic.
Right.
Which is good. That's, you know, reinvesting in the business, which has created this entire
business. I consider that a franchise fee. You know, if you open your own McDonald's, right, you pay some percentage in a franchise fee and they take care of a whole lot of stuff for you that you don't have to worry about.
Right.
Which I am glad not to have to worry about.
So there are now over 370 plugins in the plugin store.
Nice.
It's pretty incredible considering it launched only in April.
Yeah.
And there is, so Brandon showed a bar graph of store revenue over time, and it's just been growing steadily every month. So April was actually bigger than May, but every month since May, it's just been steady growth.
Yeah.
There would have been a lot of backlog.
And I think that's just a reflection of, you know, as people that we kind of live on the bleeding edge, but a lot of agencies are like just starting to adopt Craft 3 in terms of it. So it makes sense, you know, that there's going to be a ramp up, you know. So I also heard that there's some kind of new Craft Partner program.
Did you hear that?
I heard that.
You heard that this week?
Does anyone know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, the partner program has been around for a little bit in sort of a nascent beta stage.
I saw your fine logo been up there for a long time.
My fine logo was up there from
Top Shelf Limited Batch, you said?
Top Shelf Craft, yeah. Distillers Reserve programming.
Distillers Reserve.
That program is being vastly expanded,
right.
And that's mostly the work of Chief Customer Officer Les Camacho. He's been busting his butt for a long time to really build that program the right way.
Yeah.
And it's a way for agencies and developers to
to formally market themselves as invested in this platform by showing that they have a certain number of projects that they've launched on Craft, and that they, by subscribing to be a member of the partner program, they're committed to the platform.
Well, and there's a vetting process.
And then there's,
important.
A few levels of, there's a couple levels of vetting that you can add on top of that. You can be a verified partner, and you can be a verified for enterprise partner. And that means that the Pixel and Tonic have taken a look at your projects,
right,
and have judged the quality of your code.
Yeah,
I don't
care what you say you can do. Like, they're researching to make sure you've done it.
Right. And yeah. And not just your code, but one of the most poignant things that Les has said to me is, it's not just the work, it's also the experience,
right,
that a client has going to a partner that we have vouched for,
right,
being Pixel and Tonic. We don't want them to just get a website at the end. We also want them to have an experience working with this partner that reflects well on Craft
100%
as a product, and Craft as a community and as an ecosystem. And so for them to be considering that, I think is just very healthy and very wise. And so already there are many, many partners that are launching, of course, NY Studio and Put Your Lights On.
I just destroyed the credibility of their whole vetting process. If they let me in there, like, oh, come on.
Are you an authorized or verified partner, or just merely a partner?
I'm a verified partner.
Because to be merely a partner, you have to shell out your $240 in the year, and you have to have five things that you can link to.
Right. And I kind of think of this, it's almost analogous to SSL certificates, right? So you can just go and apply for an SSL certificate, and you have to provide bare minimum information. And okay, here's your SSL certificate. If you want an EV certificate, like the one where when you go to the website, it has like the name of the company on the left and a nice little secure lock thing.
Bar, yeah.
That's more like the verified, where someone actually does research into you and your company before you can get that. That's how I've always kind of thought about the difference between these things. So is there anything else from because I think we've got a whole lot to talk about in terms of the talks that went on there, because I think it's awesome that we're recapping the news in terms of the stuff that was announced, but for people that weren't here, that's the one thing they're not going to be able to experience is some of the talks.
Well, they will be able to experience the talks to some extent because Pixel and Tonic has said they're going to release the videos from all the talks.
Yeah, but you cannot understand the animal magnetism of Ben Croker unless you're in the room with him.
This is very true. This is very true. But we, I'm sure, can only come quite so close to capturing that essence ourselves on this podcast.
Right.
You had to be there. But we should talk about some talks.
So are the videos going to be available to people who were at the .all conference or to everybody in the world?
To everyone.
Everybody.
Everyone in the world.
And
that's
there's
fantastic.
There's no promise as to when, but they have said that they will be available to everyone at some point.
Because there are going to be multiple layers of video production that have to happen. So who knows when they're going to come up.
Well, the next .all, there's going to be a next .all, and it's going to be in Montreal, and it's going to be sometime next year.
I can't wait.
My prediction is not in the first 2-3 months.
Finally, a place I can drive to. I'm excited. This is going to be the East Coast finally getting his little bit of due.
You know what? I should fly up to New York and just road trip with you to .all next year.
You're welcome.
Year.
I'm going to be going. I'm probably going to be going with my wife and kids, though.
That is
and the fifth seat, the fifth seat is right between the two of them in the back. I'm just letting you know.
I'm good with kids.
Okay.
Keep them from squabbling.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good with kids.
Okay. So that's exciting that it's going to be in Montreal. But so let's talk about some of the talks that we heard. What did you folks see that you really enjoyed? Really enjoyed. Marion, go ahead. What did you take from it, or whose talks did you like?
They were all good, and I'm going to give a list of you know, small but valuable things that I take away. Because I'll come to these conferences and I'll come away with a conviction that now it is time for me to start using the PoiBot. That was a couple of years ago.
Right.
And it was totally worth the price of the conference to get me over the bump into using the PoiBot. So some of the things I learned that T translation filter is super powerful.
Yeah.
And I need to look it up. And
that was from Zoltan's talk, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I learned about keyboard traps, which is when you are trying to tab through your website and you go tab, 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 and you do not tab through it.
I thought that was when the little, I'm eating potato chips and it gets stuck under the keys. It's not a keyboard trap.
No,
for that
you want to get one of those plastic things that you put over your keyboard.
Or just not eat at the keyboard, right? That would work too, right?
Yeah, good luck with that. Now, keyboard trap, you go tab, 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 and you find yourself in some loop. And I'm humbled that all of that was about accessibility, and I'm humbled about all of the accessibility things that I should be doing and don't do.
Yeah,
but you will do now that you have.
I don't know if I will do it. I will do it on my own sites for my own amusement, and on the sites that people pay me to do, I will have a serious conversation with them about how much needs to be done and how somebody needs to pay somebody to do it.
Right.
So that's.
But you're right about the translation filter, because most people, if they've used it at all. Mm. They've just done T and then a string or whatever. But some of the stuff he showed, I didn't even know existed in terms of some of the number formatting that you can do and the ordinal. Like I knew those existed in Yi, but I didn't know that the translation filter actually exposed those.
Yeah,
that's super cool.
I thought I knew about the translation filter and I was look into that.
Yeah.
I learned that I need to... Due to the, I guess it's Laracast has their PHP Storm thing, and I need to go through that. And
how to be awesome in PHP Storm.
Yep, yeah. I need to buckle down and do that.
You're going to enjoy it. It's actually, their videos are very short, and Jeffrey Way, the guy who is presenting it, is just amazingly communicative.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a chore to watch those videos. And believe me, a lot of training videos are. Those are not.
Yeah. So, it's my thing that I need to do. What else?
Yeah. I enjoyed the IoT talk about connecting...
What's IoT?
Internet of Things.
Okay, too many acronyms. We got to explain
that.
Okay.
I know what Internet of means.
So what's the Internet?
Internet of Things.
So I made you explain the acronym. Now what does it actually mean? What's the Internet of Things?
Yeah, basically devices out there which are connected to the internet. Any kind
of your refrigerator.
Yeah.
Web-enabled toasters. Okay.
Yeah, or your Raspberry Pi and that was in that example.
Mm.
Yeah, unfortunately, the room was not full because there was a celebrity talk on the track one. The track A. Yeah.
Thank God there's no video on it.
Yeah, but really interesting. Yeah.
And what did you take from the Internet of Things talk that you found?
Well, that you can do more than just a website with Craft.
Right.
So that was Nicholas... Does anyone know that?
Nicholas DiGuglio, maybe?
Guilio?
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
But it was great.
It was really good. It was based on what he called his experiments. Mm-hmm. So he was doing similar things, but working for a company, and they're doing it their way with their kind of custom software solutions. And in his spare time, he thought, well, wouldn't this be easier to do in Craft?
Mm.
And he just did this in his spare time. And he basically built I think he said 4 to 5 person team, development team did, in a shorter amount of time on his own in his spare time on Craft. And I thought it was fantastic to see how you can stretch the capabilities of Craft or a CMS into these various fields that we wouldn't normally perhaps
and that's,
think about.
If I wasn't doing a talk, that's the talk that I would have gone to. If I took myself out of my body, I would have gone there. Because some of those... I've done some crap projects kind of like that in terms of interactive displays and places where you don't typically think of a CMS being, you know? Mm-hmm. And I find that really interesting to be doing kind of real world interactive stuff is really cool.
I have to shout out just the level of preparation of that talk. It was just one of the most solidly presented talks of the whole conference. Really high quality speaker. It excited me for two reasons. Firstly, we do a ton of IoT work that is tied to craft in one way or another, whether it's voice devices like Alexa or you know, barcode scanners or web connected random stuff. And I'm really excited that the community at large is starting to realize that they can, like, that kind of work is accessible to them.
You don't have to just make a website,
right?
You know,
and I think you know my soapbox is that our concept of a website as, you know, a page that you go to in a browser. I think that concept of a website is not long for this world. I think that we will start consuming content in much more so ubiquitous ways.
But that's the cool part.
And
your skills translate. Like your HTML, JavaScript, CSS.
Yeah.
You can take those skills and you can be making these cool like device things.
Right. And I think it also really just shines a light on how substantial it is that craft is built on this true modern application development framework. Because even, you know, when you're not talking about features of craft, the CMS, the control panel, right, you can still kind of use this platform as light decoration on an already really robust framework. And start to do some cool work. And I'm glad that the community at large is waking up to that potential and getting excited about
this. Reminds me of a talk that happened, I think it was at a peers conference a few years ago, that there was a woman that presented, and the project she was working on was done in TypeScript, but it was like a point of sale checkout thing, right? All done in JavaScript, essentially. And I'm just like, oh, no wonder it never works. You know, no, I mean, I thought it was really cool that, you know, at the grocery store checkout line, the little touchscreen device that they might be using that could be running on the same tech stack that you know when you build websites. Like, that's pretty cool. That's really cool that it is kind of pervaded into that, you know.
Cool and scary.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's sort of segue into the responsibilities we all have to think hard about what we're doing. And
well, it used to be like the old joke was at the airport you'd see like the Windows blue screen of death sometimes on the little airline displays.
Mm-hmm.
Now I envision there's going to be like you know, the Webpack, Webpack overlay like screen.
Some 500 level PHP area on your checkout lane at Kroger.
The craft 500 server error screen.
Yeah. You'll see a twig stack crawl.
If you're lucky and they don't have dev mode on,
Right. How about you, Ben? Like, what kind of talks did you see
really
and enjoy?
I enjoyed one talk called Accessibility, It Matters to Everyone by Caitlin Martinez. It wasn't a particularly technical talk, but it really made me take a good hard look at, because I talk about user experience development a lot, which means, you know, looking at the user experience and putting that first before I get into the coding.
Sure.
But it really made me ask the question, okay, well, who is the user when I'm thinking about user experience? And most often it's me or the client or perhaps somebody else who's involved in the project. But what about the end users that we, you know, that maybe have different needs or different browsers or, you know, are we measuring the user experience for them and are we making it accessible? So Caitlin, I love the demos because she made it very clear. She showed, you know, here's one version of the website without accessibility built in. And she showed us what the issues were for screen readers, for example. And then she showed us another version of the same website with accessibility built in. Mm. And it was such a huge difference.
Right.
And I mean, you know, we use our mouse and the trackpad and sometimes the keyboard, but if you have to navigate a website with a keyboard, that's a very different experience.
Yeah, totally.
So she walked us through the process, and really, the small fixes she made, it's not difficult. It's not a lot of work. And I thought, well, yeah, if we get into the habit of doing that from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
on every website, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same like web performance. Like, just need to be testing it as you go.
Yeah,
making those improvements. Flow. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And because inclusion is a big thing, and and I think it's important also. I think we have a moral responsibility to take it more seriously. I'll speak for myself. I have a moral responsibility to take it more seriously than I have up until now. So, Caitlin also showed us some tools. Which seemed great. I haven't used any of them, but I'm looking forward to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so for myself, this is kind of biased, but I really enjoyed the talk by Simon, who did a talk on, I think the talk was like an opinionated journey into utility
first CSS. Journey into the opinionated world of utility first CSS.
We got to work on his marketing, like cut that down, make it a little better. But
I thought it was a great title.
The title's terrible, but the talk was awesome, right? The talk was really good because you could tell how enthusiastic and passionate that Simon was about that topic. And when I say I'm biased, like I was there watching him as he went through the process that he talked about when he was rebuilding the site in Tachyons back then. But I think the thing I really enjoyed about his talk was the way he tied it into the high jumpers and how everyone thought that this is the way that you're supposed to high jump, right? Until this one guy came along and did it totally different. They called it some kind of flop or something like that. And they've been doing that ever since. But it just goes to show you, like, whatever is the best practice today or whatever the group think is in terms of the way that you're doing stuff, it's not the be-all and end-all, right? I mean, someone may come up with a better or more interesting way to do it. And I think there are a lot of people that are starting to adopt utility-first CSS. I've been using it for a while, and I love it. And the Pixel and Tonic folks are starting to use it and I'm seeing more and more sites that are using it. So I think that's really cool, and I really, really enjoyed the talk. But Marion, did you see that talk as well or no?
I did not see that talk.
Did anyone else see the talk? You saw it?
No.
Nobody else saw it?
I think I need to watch the video because...
He's such a good speaker because he's so enthusiastic.
I am so far from convinced about Tailwind stuff. I have not gotten on that.
You're gonna love the video because he's speaking to you.
Okay.
And he's a very good communicator, and he leads you through like the real world, him coming from doing like BEM everything and why it ended up being a problem and how redoing it that way made his life better.
Right.
I am looking forward to watching that one. I like so much of I like the deep features of Tailwind. Like, I love the at rules.
The at apply.
That it adds. I'm still, you know, I love my BEM.
You can have your BEM.
But
so utility first CSS and BEM, they're not right. Mutually exclusive.
So I need someone to really educate. It's one of those things that I just haven't had hours in the day to
Well,
go
so clearly you went to the wrong talk.
There were so many good talks.
So that's a really important point that I think we should make. So for anyone who went to .all last year, there was one day and one track of talks, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's right.
And here the first day was double track.
Here there was a day of workshops, and then 2 days of speaking sessions, and the first day was a double track.
Right.
Like it was way bigger than it was last year.
Yeah. Right. It seemed like they balanced the tracks between more front end and back end, or
right.
less technical, more technical.
Right.
But sometimes it was a really hard choice.
Right. Yeah. No, I get it. And whenever there's a, like a dual track, you're like, you know, like yes. I would like to be in both places.
But
you know?
Sweet that the video is there. So, yeah. You know, you may miss out, but you don't miss out so, so badly.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to try not to harass Leah too much about, like, when's it coming out? When are the videos well, coming out?
I'll tell you what, the video crews that they had were serious.
Yeah.
Like, I was very, I've worked in some video production before, and I noticed a lot of, like, their setup, and just from watching what they were doing, like, they, you know, were color correcting live and paying attention to, like, the temperature of the daylight at different times for different speakers of different skin tones.
Right.
And, like, so I'm pretty sure it's a serious right. crew, and so I think.
Oh no! I mean, and they were great.
It gives me a lot of hope that they'll turn those videos around really really fast, and that would be awesome.
Yeah, in general, I think it's worth mentioning how well organized the whole conference.
They
yeah.
really did a marvelous job.
Incredible, like yeah. as a speaker, but also as an attendee.
Right.
Everything went so smoothly.
Yep.
And as you said, Michael, yeah, so professionally done. So when I was, you know, preparing to get up on stage, there was a stage manager.
Right.
So he took care of the presentation and hooking me up with the monitor and everything.
I had a hairstylist.
Yeah, with that.
What are you laughing at?
I'll tell you, you were your hairstylist's favorite client for that day.
Sorry, go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry.
Yeah, now I can see why I didn't have a talk. So not going there with the hairstyle.
You have too much hair, man.
Yes.
Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
So there was a sound engineer, there was a photographer, and there was a camera person. So it was about three or four people
yep.
per room,
yeah.
Yeah, dedicated to making sure that everything went smoothly.
Yeah, and it did go very smoothly. They've done right by their community, and it's so much work.
Yeah,
even when you have good contractors working for you, it is so much work to put on a conference.
Right, but let's talk about. So I think the conference itself was awesome. Getting the State of Craft from Brandon was awesome, as always, and the talks were awesome. But let's talk about the real reason we come here is the people, right? And
it's true.
I mean, I'm not even being, you know, touchy-feely or cheesy about it. It's totally true. Like, some of the best things that I took away from this were just discussions that I had at a bar with somebody. You know what I mean? Did you guys find that to be the case as well? Well, you were singing karaoke most of the time.
Yo, that karaoke was epic. God. It was so good.
Please don't do it now.
It was so good. Actually, not many people know this about Leia Alcantara. Mm. Alcantara? I don't know how to say her last name. Mm. Leia. She's like a semi-professional competitive karaoke singer.
Oh my God.
That she can belt it out.
Oh my God.
So this, what I'm now calling the Top Shelf Craft Karaoke Party, it was like half, you know, a bunch of Brits and me, you know, crazily singing random Paul Simon songs and Irish jigs. And then it was like a concert of, you know, Leia just singing these beautiful ballads. And it was wonderful. Actually, I also found some swing dancers at the conference venue one night, unrelated to the conference. There was a swing dance going on. And
yeah,
like
Ben Parisi
and Marianne are both swing dancers. And so we went and dance it up with the locals. But yeah, no, so many good conversations.
We're going to do a new CMS called Craft with a K, and instead of being alcohol themed, it's going to be dance themed. So stay tuned.
Right. Yeah, no, so many good conversations. I love being here around people. I love just getting owned by people who are so much smarter than I am and are just like blowing up my brain with
right.
whatever it is that they're excited about.
Right. Yep.
And that is so much fun for me. Like it's social facilitation, you know, like it raises my ambition and my, my inspiration.
Especially if you're like a freelancer and you may work with a few other people, but a lot of the time you're working kind of on your own.
Right.
There's something invigorating about then coalescing together with a bunch of people that are doing the same thing.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And they're coming at it from different angles. And so, like, I don't care who you are, like, you're going to learn something just from talking to some of the people that are there, because they're in your field, but they're doing different stuff and they're solving things different ways. And
right.
I've always found that, like, I think the production was awesome. And I think the speeches were awesome, but I always get so much out of just the social interaction and the informal conversations and stuff that goes on.
Oh, it's very heartwarming. You know, I had people coming up and saying, thank you for your plugin. And I'm thinking,
right,
that plugin, there was Plugin Factory IO, and then there's three more lines of PHP. You are so welcome. But, you know, it made a difference to them.
So. Wait, hold on. I heard a report, Marian. I heard a report that you were signing autographs.
Did you?
Someone came up to you and said, are you the Marian?
Well, the Marian from the podcast, I had to admit I was.
And then you did some autograph signing? Is that true or is that false?
Well, I don't like to advertise it.
You don't want to brag. Okay.
Yeah, you know, yeah. As soon as we say that
she's willing to sign autographs,
right,
now everybody's going to go ask her for an autograph.
Right.
Yeah.
You never know. By craft four, like, that autograph's value will have quadrupled, and you know,
keep it exclusive.
We don't want to abuse Marian's celebrity powers.
But for me, it was also nice to put a face to a name,
of course.
Because this happened to me a couple of times that we were just out to dinner or out at a bar or whatever, and I'm talking to someone for a good half hour, and then finally I figure out, oh, you're that guy. Like I'm like, oh, totally. Like, I know who you are now. But it was just really cool.
You know, we get used to identifying people by their Slack handles.
Right.
And it's nice. It's both nice to be inspired by people's views on tech and ways that they're solving problems. But it's also nice to just, like, go have a conversation with somebody from the community that every time I talk to them on Slack, we're solving each other's technical problems.
Yeah.
And then we just, like, we go eat some Indian food and talk about life. And learn another person as a human being,
right,
is you miss that, you know, in the everyday grind, and being here and just coming to really admire people as people is, I think, very healthy and very refreshing.
So there's another side to the, you know, talking to people and learning. When you're in the tech business and you have hard problems sometimes, there's the commiserating thing.
Right? What is that?
So I was going around and harassing anyone that knew anyone about Webpack, about this Webpack problem I was having. And meanwhile, when I'm at home and I'm having a problem like that and I'm frustrated, I look over at my dog and I'm like, you wouldn't believe this. And my dog just looks back at me like, are you giving me a treat? But
I feel like when you Slack me about your problems, my reaction is about the same.
All right, I'll throw you a dog treat then. No, but there is something to be gained from commiserating too, right? Because it's refreshing to understand that everyone encounters hard challenges, right? Because it's a hard field. What about you, Oliver? Do you enjoy kind of the social interaction and meeting some people?
Yeah, for me it was a special situation because, well, the conference came to our city. And yeah, on people asked me about the city, and they were curious what to do, and I could help them. It was good, and especially meeting our clients was important,
right,
and having conversations basically.
Right.
Yeah. But that's what conferences are about usually.
Right, but I do find that there's something special, semi-special about this conference, like, because it does feel like we're one big family in a sense. And I've been to other developer conferences where I felt completely anonymous,
right?
And it's very different here.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like, loneliness is no joke in our profession. It's logistically just set up for, you know, you don't always get a whole lot of connection with people, and that can have serious implications on people's happiness and mental health and to be able to see this manifestation of real family and real connection, you know, is much more than touchy feely. I mean, it's life and death in some cases, right. and I think that
touchy feely is life this, and death.
Well, it's true. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, not in a cheesy way. I think that you know, the amount of attention that this community pays to each other's wellness is very warming and
there's one other
and
thing
very, and somewhat unique.
There's one other thing that really helped my wellness while I was here. And that is that Germany's got really good beer. Like that, I really enjoyed drinking your beer. Thank you, Germany. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know if you're using
it up here. Yeah. Beer.
Wellness. I don't know if that word means what you think.
Wait, you mean wellness doesn't mean getting a buzz? That's not the same thing.
So we joke about beer, and I try to not.
I don't joke about beer. I take it very seriously.
I try to not go too far, lest people think that, you know, these conferences are just about drinking, and you can have a lot of fun and have all these same meaningful connections and inspirations at a conference if you never touch a single beer.
For sure.
And good for you. I mean, I spent several days and I was just like, yep, don't have the spoons for it today. I'm drinking water.
Right.
But it is also, I mean, it's, you know, it's nice to party. And,
well, that's your computer science credentials.
And, right. But also, Berlin is such a friendly city. And
yeah.
We did so much walking.
Yeah.
Because, like, the venues and the hotels were just close enough
mm-hmm.
that you felt like, meh, a cab probably isn't worth it. But just far enough that it was a substantial walk. Like,
but I enjoy that.
In the nice, crisp autumn air. Like,
that's something I do every day as I go on a hike. So this was perfect. I'm like, I can do my hike and go where I'm supposed to go as opposed to just walking through the woods somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to say something?
Yeah, I also want to honor the fact that Pixontonic brought it to Europe because that is a big mm-hmm. move.
Yeah.
But as you say, I mean, this is a multicultural city.
Yeah.
And our community, you know, border, you know, it's totally global. We had people from at least 4 continents here mm-hmm. that I know of.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. It felt very inclusive. And I know, you know, there's a code of conduct, but, you know, that's just a code of conduct. But everybody, I felt, was welcome.
Yeah.
Everybody was helping each other. Everybody was here to have a good time, learn, and make connections.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, they have to have a code of conduct, right? Because they're a conference.
Sure.
But if there's any conference that didn't need one, it was this. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, like everyone here, I didn't run into anybody that was being
I think the reason this conference is the way it is because there's
much
thought put into into the...
Well, culture comes from leadership, right? With any company.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's good they have a code of conduct and they take it seriously and it's important to them. And because it's taken seriously and it's important to them, it feels like, what do they need that for? Because everybody's behaving themselves.
Right.
And
I admit,
culture is the manifestation of the first principles.
I mean, I admit that I did harass Brad Bell a little bit, but other than that, you know.
Well, there was some good long hugs.
Yeah.
But I would say that Brad was enthusiastically consented to the very long.
He did enthusiastically consent.
Enthusiastic consent I have ever received.
I even got a massage.
To hug a person.
I even got a massage. Did you know every speaker is supposed to get a complimentary massage?
Well,
from
me. That must be next.
You'll have to call yours in. Yeah. All right.
Well, that is awesome. Does anyone have any kind of closing things that they want to say about?
Come to Dottol next year.
Come to Dottol in Montreal. Yeah. So for anyone, really though, for anyone
also
who
watch the videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For anyone who didn't make it here, try to make time to make it next year, because I do think you'll find it worth your while to make it here. I know some of our other esteemed co-hosts really wanted to be here, like Jonathan Melville, Patrick Harrington. They really wanted to come here. Earl, I don't know where he is. I don't know. Earl is off like chasing a rock band somewhere. But if you want to, you really should make an effort to get to Montreal for the next one. You're going to learn something. You're going to have a good time. I mean, how does it get any better than that? Right? You know? So I think that about wraps it up for another episode of the DevMode.fm podcast. To have every episode delivered to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to our RSS or subscribe via iTunes or Google Play. If you like what we're doing, leave us a review. And you can also follow us on Twitter at DevModeFM. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Just leave us a comment on the DevMode.fm website. For the DevMode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Ben Croker.
Marianne Nolifant.
I'm Michael Rogg.
And Oliver Stark.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Have some editing work to do.
Why?
I noticed that this microphone, it really is a directional microphone.